Hey everybody, welcome to Love Bite. It's Mistress and I'm solo because Nancy's, many of you may know this or not, her mother passed away. And so she is obviously dealing with far more important things than a kinky podcast. Before I start, I'm doing this all alone. I'm all alone in the studio, but it's okay. We'll see how this goes. I just want to really quickly just say I didn't know Nancy's mom well. I met her a couple times, but she could light up a room like you wouldn't imagine. And even though she was really suffering through, you know, these bouts of cancer, she took the time to teach, you know, this white girl how to make tamales and like really make it. And she was so insistent on the right kind of masa and how you do it. And, you know, I took all the notes and one of these days I would like to make tamales again. And, you know, because it's the way that she did it. So that's the kind of woman that she was. So she'll definitely be missed. And my heart goes out to Nancy right now. And I'm not going to cry because I told myself I wasn't going to cry because that's not what you do on the radio. You don't cry. Anyway, so welcome to Love Bite, as I said previously. And today I'm going to talk about 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm going to break it down into several components. First, obviously, we're kind of not even a kink friendly. We're a totally kinky show. So we talk about kink all the time. And 50 Shades of Grey obviously has this kink component to it. And, you know, it's now called what, mommy porn. And people are just terribly shocked at some of the things that are happening in this book, which for those of us who are, you know, kind of far down the kinky path and kind of do a lot of this shit all the time, this is, I don't know, I would qualify it as adventurous vanilla sex, but, you know, who am I? But I clearly am. Maybe it's because they didn't focus on the kinky things in the books. So to give you a quick rundown, I've actually read the entire trilogy, and I've actually read the first book twice. I had to read it a second time because of research, even though I skimmed some sections because there's just a lot of sex. And oddly enough, I'm doing a stick figures in 50 Shades, so that's going to be up pretty soon because that'll be pretty funny. So if you don't want to read it, it'll be like 7 minutes long. So you're good. You don't have to waste your time. Fantastic. I quickly want to discuss, why is this book so popular? I mean, why is it so exciting? Obviously, there's the new component, which has the BDSM, the kink. That's something that you don't see in mainstream, quote unquote, literature. So, you know, I could see that be something different, but it really boils down to the overarching theme of a love story, of very much kind of the fairy tale component. You know, what the prince who falls for the lowly, you know, serf, you know, which would be very Cinderella-like. And we all, you know, see that. We all want to live like the other half lives. So I can see how that is very tantalizing to people. So there's that, and then additionally there's the fiery, passionate love that neither side believes that they deserve, and that's kind of the way, Nick. That's kind of the way that we all want our love to be, and so that, you know, we have the sense that somebody else loves us, and we're so shocked. Like, how can they possibly care about us because I'm unworthy? Where both sides feel that they're unworthy. There's no imbalance. There's no, you know, it's like this perfect, you know, kumbaya moment, this panacea of bliss. And so, you know, that's kind of the overarching reasons why it's so attractive to, you know, the mommies out there or the housewives that just don't necessarily feel that they have that. I mean, let's be honest, a happy relationship seems to be fairly uncommon these days. So it's one of those experiences where, you know, you read this romance novel, and I'm not a romance novel reader. You know, I'm just not one of those people that busts out Danielle Steele and stuff. I did back in my younger days, and it really just fucked me up because then I wanted like my romance to be like in this book, which is not 50 Shades, but like a Danielle Steele book. And it's just not realistic. So, you know, but again, there's something very exciting and tantalizing about the lack of realism in a love story like this. So, I mean, I can see it. I can understand it. randomly, I wasn't actually discussing 50 Shades at all. I was in a completely vanilla context and near strangers, people I didn't know. I was reading on the beach with my Kindle. And this woman randomly says, oh, is that a Kindle? I'm thinking, yeah, duh. I mean, it's obviously a Kindle. And I was like, yeah, and she goes, oh, well, how do you like it? And we kind of talk about it briefly. And then she said, I really want to get one. And I said, you should. They're not expensive. And I said, I've got 60 books, including the complete works of Shakespeare and the Brontes and Austen and all that kind of stuff. And she said, oh, I just really want it so that nobody knows I'm reading 50 Shades of Grey. And I just laughed. And it's funny because when you spend so much time with kinky people and in the lifestyle, you forget that something like that is, risque, that a mother with children, like this woman was, would possibly read something so outlandish that discussed things like, anal sex, and they have sex toys. And, so I can see why, I guess, that she would be ashamed to reveal to the random people that she's reading it. Or maybe it's to her kids. What do I know? And then oddly enough, later on the same day, I don't know why. So I'm sitting here just reading, and this guy literally comes up behind my shoulder, looking over my shoulder, and he goes, what you reading? And I'm thinking, dude, personal space. Let's start with that, because this is rude. I look up at him and I'm like, oh. And I'm not a person to hide, even from people that I don't, know what I'm doing. And I just said, oh, 50 Shades of Grey. And he goes, really? He goes, I hear that it's pretty spicy. And I just, said, well, it's not that spicy. I mean, it's okay. Because it just is. It's okay. And he goes, yeah, but I hear they talk about it. And he audibly lowers his voice, fisting. And I laughed because I'm like, yeah, they talk about fisting. And I don't lower my voice. And I said, but there really is no fisting in it. And, it's one of those things. I don't know. I should have probably just followed his social cue and decided to be less audacious with my approach to sexuality and been more, had the courtesy to blush or something. But, when you get into this lifestyle and you spend so much time in it, it's easy to forget what life was like before it. It's easy to forget that the vanilla world is insanely different from us. And they're babies crawling around, and they haven't gotten up to run, and we're running marathons. So, looking at it like that, and especially a book like this, 50 Shades, where you can see the different levels of, where somebody is and where somebody isn't. So that's kind of my thoughts on it from a very vanilla, a vanilla side. Outside of the fact that just randomly, everybody talks about the 50 Shades. Oh, and then it's funny how everybody just looks at you when you're reading 50 Shades, even the kinky people, I will let you know. So even the kinky people, when I said I was reading 50 Shades, they were like, really? I hear it's awful. And I'm like, well, and I've heard that from everybody. It's awful. All right. So I'm reading it. And, it's not ever going to be a great work of literature ever. She thankfully got a thesaurus in the second and third book. So, I'm grateful for that. But, it's not great writing. It's not even a great story because there's not really a lot of originality to it. There's a lot of sex in it. I mean, there is a lot of sex. But it's not great erotica because there's a lot. They don't use real words. They don't use cock and they don't even use penis. They talk about her sex and his manhood. And that shit just pisses me off. And this is a totally stupid thing, but this is just who I am. The spelling of the word come, okay, when it is, a verb to come towards something, it is C-O-M-E. But when we're talking about sex, it's C-U-M. Let's just be honest. That's just what the word is. And it wasn't spelled like that in the book. Throughout the book, it was C-O-M-E. And I'm like, really, really? Can we, just at least discern it? Is it a bad word? Have I missed that train? Are we not allowed to say that? Is that in one of those seven deadly words that that George Carlin did at some point? Nine? I don't know, whatever, how many words it was. But it's a little pet peeve of mine. Maybe I'm picky. I'm also picky that it doesn't really qualify as erotica because, well, maybe it does. This is why I'll never get published, because everything that I write is too hardcore. I'm reading this and I was just like, yeah, that's sweet. But it was kind of like you're having sex with somebody and maybe it's the first time that they're doing oral sex. And so they really don't know what they're doing. So they never really quite hit the spot. So that's kind of like what this book was, where it was like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, no, you missed it. That wasn't, why were you finished so quickly? I don't understand. But But then again, I also think that when you're kinky, like most of us are, you kind of look at sex in a very different way. And although it's not that I would say that all sex for kinksters has to be kinky, there's a component there. It changes. And there can be things that are completely non-sexual that are incredibly kinky. You know, the whole concept of total power exchange that we talk about on the show and within the lifestyle, definitively, it is one of those things that it can make you feel very sexualized. It can make you feel very aroused without specifically being anything that's sex related. So, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm a big fan of in BDSM is that it's not always about sex. And I actually have friends that don't get that don't understand how you can have the BDSM and not have it be about sex, or at least, you know, so intertwined that it's difficult to discern the two. And I just don't see that. I mean, maybe it's because I do so much play, you know, with platonic friends that I, you know, it's just not sexual. I'm not, you know, when I play with Subgirl, I love her to death, but it's not a sexual experience. You know, it's an awesome toppy experience for me, and she gets her bottomy experience. But neither side of us are feeling, you know, sexualized. And at the end, you know, yes, this is heat and passion. No, that's just not going to happen because it's just not our relationship. So, you know, my point is that BDSM has all of these components to it. It's not just about the sex. It's not just about the beating and the play. Okay, so that's kind of the vanilla component of 50 Shades of Grey. Do you want to talk about how I couldn't stand that it was written in the first person by the submissive? Can we talk about that? She was so whiny. And I got to know, subs, are you that whiny in your heads and you just don't let it out because you're scared of your D-type? Because she was so fucking whiny. Like, shut up, bitch. Like, I hate you. I hated her in the first 10 pages before it even got kinky. Because, like, she was always talking down about herself, and she's always, you know, just kind of scared, like this little rabbit that's always terrified of being, you know, jumped out at by some sort of wolf or something. Which, mind you, you know, for me, I don't mind a certain amount of fear on the, you know, submissive side, but all the time, you know, it gets a little old. I mean, let's give me some balance here. That's my take on that. Just saying. I don't know. That's just me because I get a little bit bitchy because that's how I roll. It's a D-type thing. Okay, so my issues with the book, which can be great. First, I want to talk about the limits. So the limits of the D-type. Now, to the credit of the book, they did have a contract and they did talk about the rules of the contract. And the contract did, you know, highlight what are the roles and responsibilities of the parties. And they discussed hard limits and soft limits, and it was very clearly stated within the book that the submissive really had the power because the submissive could say no, saying that that was a hard limit, and so then that wouldn't happen. And I enjoyed that they addressed that to a degree because that's very true, that, you know, you at the beginning of the relationship, you have to set very clearly what the parameters are, and then you have to very clearly and openly communicate those throughout the relationship. But at the moment of setting the parameters, it really is, you know, the submissive's game, because mostly, I mean, there are dominants that have limits, clearly, but, you know, mostly it's about the person that is having the things being done to them. What are their limits, what they can't handle, whether it be due to some emotional issue or whether it be some physical issue, you know, whatever, it's whatever they can't handle. So I liked that, you know, they had a thorough discussion about what this contract thing is, which for the vanilla world, I think would be shocking. You know, could you imagine if you're just going to go out with a guy or a girl and, you know, they present you a non-disclosure agreement and a contract and that's how it's going to go? I mean, you'd be like, fuck you. I don't need this shit. But, you know, in our world, it's how we operate. It's just one of the things that we do. And we do have romantic relationships, but largely these are not specifically romantic relationships. And the romance is not highlighted in any sort of a contract unless somebody has a hard limit for romance. And you know what? I'm wondering, is that a hard limit of mine? I don't think so. But, you know, because I like these stupid, fluffy, happy, lovey fucking books. Don't tell anybody, though, although I just did. Whatever. So the limits. So the limits of this guy, who's apparently been doing this for 12 years or something like that. And his limits are, to me, for somebody who's been in this lifestyle for 12 years, it's like, Don't you get bored of all that other shit? Don't you want to do something else? It's pretty much like all he likes to do is impact and sensation. And so all the good shit is off the table. Now, mind you, I encourage off the table being the children and animals. That should be off the table. That is a definitive hard limit, and I recommend that being a hard limit. It's definitely one of mine. And then one of them also is you know, defecation, which is another one of my hard limits, which he did not actually address. Roman showers, which is vomiting, and that's another one of my hard limits. But he doesn't, you know, urination is one of his hard limits, which is golden showers, which, you know, is it's not necessarily common, but it's definitely in the kink list of several people that I know. And it's definitely in the list of things that people are drawn to for whatever reason. Usually it's a humiliation factor. Obviously, golden showers is definitively about humiliation. So, you know, that was gone, which kind of made me sad. No medical play at all, which made me really sad because, you know, I just saw a little speculum, so sad, being left alone and not being used for general, you know, medical play. And it was specifically like, you know, gynecological medical play, which to me, dude, if you're a kinky fucker and you want to fist somebody, come on, what better than to bust out some, you know, gynecological play? That's just, you're missing out, dude. You really are. It's just, I felt sad for him. I felt sad that he had all these limits. Fire play was one of his hard limits. I mean, seriously, it's awesome and it's not painful. Come on, people. Any needles? And come on, we love needles, don't we? If you don't, you should try loving needles. You should love the way I do needles. I just went to a thing this morning where we did needles to one of my femdom groups. And, you know, everybody's like piercing everybody with needles. And I just, you know, people were like, oh, you know, do you do needles? I was like, yeah. So then somebody said, oh, I've never had them. Can you do it for me? So I do a needle for her. And she was just like, I didn't feel it at all. And everybody started coming around and said, well, wait, how do you do that? And I started doing my needles and they're like, wait, everybody come here. This is how she does her needles. And I'm like, what? What are you? This is not unusual. I'm not doing anything unusual. But point is, we had a lot of converts that this morning that were interested in the needle play that might not have been before that. So, because needles are fantastic and it's a really quick way to get an adrenaline rush for both parties, to be quite honest, and has very minimal pain and minimal marking. And it's actually can be done fairly safely. So, you know, it's not like sterile, like you're in a hospital and shit. But so that's my stamp of approval on needles, as long as you are trained in it. But anyway, so he didn't have needles. That was one of his hard limits. No knives. Come on, people. No knife play? Seriously. I mean, you don't have to cut the skin for knife play, but knife play is a huge component of fear. And this guy's all about making her scared in some way or another, you know, because it's fear is a fantastic tool to use in this kinky world. So, you know, he took a lot of the good stuff away, and I can't think what else the limits are because I didn't write them down because I'm an idiot. But there were so many great limits that were just gone. Gone, baby, gone. I'm trying to see if I have another thing. And that made me sad. Oh, my God. The saddest, like literally, like I almost cried. Okay, that's not true. No permanent marks. No permanent marks. Which to me, like, takes away, because there are single tails that'll definitely give you a permanent mark. You know, and there's a lot of submissives out there that they love that they're permanently marked by somebody, you know, whether it be through branding, whether it be through, you know, cell popping can result in permanent marking. Whatever the method that ends in a permanent mark, there's several submissives that they just relish and enjoy having that on their body forever, given to them by, you know, XYZ dominant at whatever point in their life. And it means so much to them. And I will tell you from the D-type perspective, it means just as much to us because, you know, we were there. We marked our fucking territory, you know, just like, you know, an alpha dog. That was ours. That was my bitch, and I did that. So, you know, she's now somebody else's bitch, or he's somebody else's bitch, but at some point, there was that marking. You know, and I actually have former submissives that, you know, have marks on them that they say, you know, I still look at that, and I think of you, and I think of that scene, I think of that moment, and I remember it very fondly. And that makes me feel good. So, you know, permanent marking. Let's not say no to that. Let's not say no. But my point is not just specifically how much these limits are lame. My opinion, if you guys have these limits, it's totally awesome. Everybody should have their own limits. Please don't have my limits. Have your own limits. But it was that somebody who is in this lifestyle for 12 years, for I guess 6 years as a submissive and 7 years, or I guess it's 13 years, I guess 7 years as a dominant, I find it hard to believe that they would have all of these limits. Because as we progress in this lifestyle, as we learn and we grow, we want to learn more. We want to keep pushing the envelope. We want to keep crossing that imaginary barrier that's going to make us, you know, better. That's going to make us, you know, a better top, a better bottom, a better dominant, a better submissive, a better switch. And you can't really do that unless you're expanding your skill set. You know, and if all you're going to do is use the playroom with, you know, the whips and the crops and the canes and you know, some sensory deprivation and of course a lot of sex, that's great. And if that's your thing, then that's fine. But then there's a different focus for that kind of a person, that kind of a dominant. And if they've found exactly what they're looking for and they're satisfied, that's fine. But I will tell you personally, I've never met somebody like that. I've never met somebody in this lifestyle that just became complacent and completely satisfied with where they were. I haven't met a submissive like that. Every single person that I've met, and maybe I'm just lucky to know extraordinary people, they are constantly trying to grow, constantly trying to learn, to better themselves in whatever category that they are, and often even to grow and change out of that category, whether it be to become a switch, to become, you know, a bottom or whatever, to just grow and change, which is one of the things that makes this lifestyle so amazing. Because, you know, let's be real, sometimes in our life we get stuck with shit. We get stuck in, you know, jobs. We get stuck in sometimes marriages. And there's no room. There's no room to grow. There's no ability. There's no, you know, whatever it is. And so you can't get that rush, that feeling of becoming a better person, for lack of a better term, kind of evolving. And in this lifestyle, you can almost continually evolve. I don't see there's a time when you would stop. I mean, there's all, as much as your brain can think of something kinky to do, you know, that's as far as you can go. So until your brain stops coming up with shit, you know, you can keep doing it. You keep pushing that envelope, keep doing things that are perhaps odd to the vanilla folk, but fantastic for us. So, you know, that I had a lot of issues with the limits in the book on that. Outside of just the general sadness that he took all the fun stuff away. I was really sad about Fireplay because I thought that would be really awesome to read in a book, a fireplace scene. Because, you know, we've all seen fireplace scenes. Well, if you haven't, I suggest you do. And sometimes they're very kind of tame. You know, you don't want to have it be too intense. And then sometimes they're like, wow. And you're like, I want to see that again. And let's, you know, see the fire light up. And you know, it depends on the person and whatever, and if you're doing it in tandem, et cetera, et cetera. But so a fire scene in a quote unquote erotic novel would have been really fantastic, as would have a knife scene. Let's be honest, because knife scenes are really, really hot. Yes, yes, they are. And not just from the D-type perspective. I know from the S-type perspective that it's hot too, not because I've done it as an S-type person, but because I've seen it in the S-type people. So, there's a couple. I'm going to get to my big points that are my things that really fucking piss me off about this book in a little bit. You know, one of my issues is the protagonist. And if you have not read this book and you want to read this book, you should not listen now because I'm going to give shit away. The protagonist, the female protagonist, she's a virgin. And her first exposure to anything sexual is this dominant. And he wants to, you know, expose her to spankings and caning and whipping and all of the fantastic things that our lifestyle have, but she has never experienced any just general generic vanilla sex. Which of course, you know, for the dominant, that's terrifying. Like, I'd be like, whoa, no, you need to go get some experience, get some notches on your belt before you come back, because I don't want to be responsible for that, because that'll just fuck you right up, I'm pretty sure. Or set you on the right path. I guess it depends on how you look at it. But in the you know, that component, the virginity component, to me was very much about this fantasy ideal that, you know, that he can have this perfect submissive that he can train, and the only sex that she would have ever known has been him. And that there was very much this concept, this thought to me that that was as appealing to him as a dominant as anything else, that it was his wholly, and there was no back history. Which, I don't know. Am I weird because I don't want somebody who's never had a history? I would rather have somebody with a little bit of history. I mean, I don't want, like, hobag. Maybe I do. But I'm not talking about sex. I'm just talking about, you know, like, the BDSM kink world at this point. And I don't want somebody who's, you know, on their 50th mistress. I also don't want somebody who's, you know, has no idea. I mean, they know nothing. There's so much work that goes into somebody that knows nothing and doesn't research and stuff like that. If they research and they go to classes, we'll talk. But, you know, otherwise. So that was kind of a thing. Another one of the components that kind of irritated me about the book was that it painted all dominants as control freaks. And I don't think that we are. I mean, I have things about which I am very controlling, but I'm really overall not a total control freak. I'm not going to try to exert my control over anybody that I don't have the permission to do so. And there are really only two dominants in these books. And one obviously is one of the co-protagonists. And then there was this other woman who was, you know, another dominant. And they're both kind of just kind of controlling, really controlling. And not just of Anastasia, who's the main protagonist. It's of kind of their whole lives and everything and the way that they manage it. And I just don't, I mean, I know some people that are a little bit like that, but I don't, it certainly is not, it's too broad of a brush to paint the world like this, of course, you know. So it makes me saddened that the vanilla world is now, you know, getting their exposure to BDSM through this, and it's so kind of flawed. Not as flawed as really the some of the bigger issues for me. And one of them definitely was that the only reason that that this protagonist, Christian is his name, is dominant and enjoys and is he doesn't claim to be a sadist, but enjoys inflicting pain and punishing women, is because of some scarring emotional trauma that made him this way, that it was due to some horrific background in his life that ended up in turning him into this, you know, monster, for lack of a better word. And that's so it's so frustrating because not just me, I know a lot of people really struggled accepting who we were in this lifestyle. And to accept that we weren't monsters, to accept that we weren't just freaks and something was clearly wrong with us. And then there's this mainstream book that just feeds into that, that, well, of course, you obviously have some sort of a mental issue. Because if you didn't have a mental issue, you wouldn't do such things. Why would you get, you know, any sort of erotic or emotional or whatever pleasure out of inflicting pain upon somebody? You know, clearly it's a deep-seated emotional issue. Your daddy didn't love you enough, that kind of shit. And when I read it, I mean, it made me really mad, like really fucking pissed off that this author would be so flippant about the way that, you know, she would present this. You know, and it made me think, wow, you know, looking at myself, looking at my peers within the community, is that a truism? Am I just getting defensive because I'm, you know, I'm affronted and I don't want this to be true? But is it true? I mean, I don't want to, if it is, I need to go get some fucking therapy, apparently. The funny thing is, I mean, I think that so many of us, and I know me personally, went through the therapy, went through the trying to not be this way. I married a complete asshole for way too long to try and not be this way, to try and be normal, to try and be a good girl, to try and be like everybody else is supposed to be, because I just wasn't. I was not like them. I was different. And And I knew I was different. And because none of my friends talked about these things, and we talked about sex a lot, none of my friends talked about these really dark desires. I assumed that I was broken. There was something wrong with me that I needed to somehow get fixed. Now, mind you, I could never bring myself to be open and honest with any of my therapists about these darker thoughts, because I just assume they would call the cops. You know, if they think that you're a harm to yourself or others, they must report it, that kind of shit. So I was like, well, what if they think I'm actually going to fucking hurt somebody? So I'm not going to say anything because that would be bad. Of course, full disclosure, I also didn't want to admit that I masturbated to my shrink. So, you know, whatever. That's because for whatever reason, I thought that was wrong. I don't know. Don't ask me. I was stupid and young. But for me, and going through that experience of, I really did not like me. I didn't like where I was going. I didn't like kind of this darkness that I had inside of me. I struggled hard for years, for a really long time. I left the fucking country to try and escape it. And it, guess what? You can't run away from yourself. Just so you know, if y'all were looking, that's how it's going to work. And then I went even further, and I ended up getting into a really, really bad marriage. It was abusive. It was not good. And it that impacted me in a very different way that I still struggle with to this day. And so when I finally, you know, dealt with that shit for my marriage, I was able to reemerge as, you know, almost like the butterfly from the chrysalis, and realize, you know what, this is who I am. And I don't think there's anything really wrong with me. And then I found, you know, kinky people. I found FetLife, and I found, you know, Munches and other people that really were just like me. And then I wasn't a bad person. I can do these things and not be a bad person. And I really felt that this, you have this scarring emotional trauma that resulted in this character in the book being, you know, sadistic or enjoying this subjecting pain. That really resonated with me in a very negative way, because it brought back all of those fears that, wow, you know, am I fucked up? What's wrong with me? And I thought I'd put that to rest, which clearly I didn't, because I don't like to put things to rest, not when it's dealing with my emotional issues. So that it brought it all back up for me. And I've been doing, it's probably why I read the books twice, because I've been doing a lot of the thinking about that, about is there an accuracy to this? You know, and I mean, we could talk about my childhood, which you don't want to, because that's, you know, therapy, and you don't want to hear about my childhood. But, you know, I can look back at my childhood and I can say, okay, yeah, there were issues in my childhood, but you know what? You can look at your childhood and there are issues in your childhood. You can, the person that is not into kink can look at their childhood and there's issues in their childhood. You know what? Because childhood is issueful, and we're all going to be fucked up, and all of us who have kids, they're going to be fucked up too, and it's all going to be our faults. So, you know, it's just the way life goes. It's the circle of life of fucked upness that, you know, we just get fucked up. That's emotions. And, you know, being overly cognizant of them, I don't think necessarily is beneficial. Neither is being, you know, ignoring them is not beneficial as well. So, you know, the balance thing, which I'm really shitty at. So there's that. But it bothered me, and it'll probably still continue to bother me. Another point that really bothered me was the concept that the love of the right person can, quote unquote, cure you. Because again, you know, in order to stick with the fairy tale theme, they both have to save each other from each other. You know, it's Cinderella, it's Pretty Woman, when they saved each other from each other or from themselves. And it really struck a nerve, because it made me think, you know, Nancy used to say that sometimes, you know, her family would say, well, you're just a lesbian because you just haven't found the right man yet. And it's not that that's an uncommon thing for people who just can't accept homosexuality. And I think that people, I look at kink very similarly to homosexuality, because I truly do believe that those of us that are kinky, this is how we're born. I think that we just are born this way, because so many people I know have such early sensations, memories of of having these kinds of desires, whether it be to dominate or to submit, from very early childhood. So, you know, that to me is like, yeah, that's that was kind of how you was made. You didn't, you know, your parents didn't teach it to you when you were two, let's be honest. So the fact that, you know, the love of the right person can cure you, it just, it seems so dangerous, because then, you know, we already spend too much time with stupid love stories on TV and movies and books and things. And then to believe, have this fear instilled in us that there really is something wrong with us, that we only do these things because of some childhood trauma. You know, it's all building upon itself in this book. But if our knight or princess in shining armor or shining, you know, silver, fuck, I don't know, what are you going to put a princess in, can come and save us, then everything will be okay. Then everything will be okay, which is just bullshit. And it's so annoying. And it's, you know, gross moral turpitude, which is a line from the book, and I apologize for saying it. It's one of those things where we don't have to look at ourselves as broken or fixed, because I personally believe that everybody's broken. We're all broken, because the moment that our heart gets broken, the moment that something happens in our life, that there's a crack, that essentially breaks us. But we have to go through all of these moments, these breaks, these, and then heal, because that makes us better. That gives us an opportunity to grow and to become the people that we're supposed to be. And I believe that most of us that are being true and honest to ourselves as kinky fuckers, it's refreshing when you can just accept it. And you just breathe and say, you know what? This is what I am. This is who I am. And I don't have to look back and point to some experience in my childhood or to some therapist to say why or to justify it or to build upon it. I just, this is it. And it's that acceptance that is amazing. And in this, the S-type person, the person who's supposed to be the submissive, she definitely had some issues with shame for enjoying the things like the spankings, which to me are just vanilla. Sorry. Please, there are vanilla people out there that just spank. I mean, I know I had my ass spanked when I was having sex in a vanilla context before I was ever really kinky. So, you know, I know what's happening. I'm not crazy out here. But this concept that she felt shame for enjoying it. And I know I that's something that rings true for me. All right, so my very first that I was aware that something was wrong with me, kinky experience. I was 17 and I was a freshman in college. I ended up turning 18 during that first semester, but we're not getting into that. So I was 17 in my freshman year in college, and I had this issue that turned into a forced bi between my boyfriend and his roommate. And I remember I was mortified. I felt an intense amount of shame, not regret, but I looked back at that moment and I felt that I was correct in my experience to watch them and at that point think that that wasn't hot, because it really wasn't. Because when you see two guys that just, you know, and they're kissing and it's just not hot sometimes. Sometimes it is, but this was not. It was really very unattractive to watch. But at the same time, I had that top space rush. I didn't know what it was at the time. But I had that that thrill, that just exhilaration that you get when, you know, you're all top spacey. But I remember feeling just so ashamed that I felt good about that I had debased these people and I enjoyed it, and that it was very difficult. I mean, I really struggled with accepting that. I don't think I did until, you know, in the last couple of years where I just accepted, where I accepted the whole kit and caboodle, the whole shebang. And that was, That was good in this book to read, that she, although mind you, literally it's one sentence, they don't really go into it a lot, but it's that, you know, she was struggling with the fact that she enjoyed the pain. And I think that that's a very real experience for many of us that we go through this particular journey, is that I think it depends on how you're introduced to it. But once you accept that this is kind of the way that you like shit, it makes your life a lot easier and makes your life a lot better. Unless, of course, you want to follow this particular book's outline and find somebody that can cure you. And then you won't need any of it. No, you won't need any of it. I mean, apparently there's some spankings and stuff, but there's like nothing else. There's no good shit that goes on, as we've discussed. I think there's a blindfold. But the blindfold in it is like from an airline, which it just doesn't actually blindfold you. You could still see out of it. So it's kind of pointless. So that's kind of how that one goes. But overall, my overall opinion is that I think that this book could potentially be good. And my reason being is that if somebody, you know, reads this and in the sex scenes they become aroused for whatever reason, and mind you, there's just plain a lot of just plain vanilla sex. There's a lot of sex in this book, let me just say. There's a lot of, hey, we're talking and then we're fighting and then we're gonna have sex. And then we're talking and we're fighting and then we're gonna have sex. And then we're talking and we're fighting and we're gonna have sex, and then we're just gonna have sex. And then we're not gonna talk again, and then we're gonna have sex again. There's a lot of that in the book. And it gets repetitive and a lot of the same expressions are used, which really irritates me. Like I said, thesaurus. But I think that you get to a point where you exhaust all of the possible ways you could say release and orgasm. I don't think that you could say it many more ways in the erotica world anyway. But the reason I think that it's good is that that a person can, in the privacy of, you know, this love story, try to experience and enjoy what could be a fantasy for them. And maybe there would be, you know, I understand that there's now 50 Shades passion parties, which to me is just fucking hilarious. Because what kind of shit are they going to sell? I mean, it's all going to be stupid shit that you would buy on, it's all like feather floggers and a rabbit flogger. And, you know, come on, please give me a break. You know, that's, I don't even think that qualifies as anything. You could just fucking tickle somebody with a goddamn feather. It's very irritating, personally. But it's allowing these people in now what is going to be considered socially acceptable, a way to approach perhaps some feelings that they might have had for longer in their life that they've repressed. You know, the housewife who's bored of the sex with her husband because it's boring, let's be honest. You know, now maybe there's a way to enhance that and make it a little bit better by tapping into some of the kinkier desires. I would be very interested to see if there were any women who read this book and were not kinky beforehand and decided that they wanted to embrace it and try it, but they were not submissive, that they resonated far more with the dominant. Because I know when I read it, I was all about understanding what the dominant was thinking and feeling. And so I felt when the dominant would say things, I'd be like, damn, Skippy. And then the submissive would whine in her head. And I'm like, bitch, you better be glad that I can't hear what's going on in your head. But it would be interesting to me to see if, you know, if the gender roles, if they were reversed. And then they were able to resonate with that. As the same as with a man, if he resonated more with the submissive in it. Although I don't really know how many men are reading this book. I wish I had data. Because that would be really interesting bit of information to have. I could Google it, but because I'm alone, I'm not going to leave you with the silence of me trying to Google shit. So I'm going to keep on jabbering away. But I think that those opportunities that this, albeit, you know, fairly shabby book, is opening opportunities for vanilla people to explore, to, you know, see if maybe they're a sprinkle, or maybe, you know, no, they don't like it. It doesn't appeal to them. Or maybe they're full on just kinky fuckers. And for me, I think that's a good dialogue. That's a good discussion point to have, because you can, you know, in these moments of safety, in these moments of comfort and desire for this magical relationship, you can enjoy that. and you can expand your own sexuality, your own experiences. That's really what literature is about, right? I don't know. Is that what literature is about? No, well, not about sex. I mean, I guess literature isn't about sex. I mean, I don't know. You got to look back at some of those Bronte sisters. There was a lot of sexual tension in those books, but we're not discussing English literature in this particular show. No. Oh, did you know? Because that kind of irked me when I found out that this actual entire series of books was originally Twilight fanfic. So as soon as I found this information out, I became really fucking pissed because I kept seeing the characters from Twilight in it as opposed to the characters that are in this book. And I was just pissed because I was like, I really hated the relationship in Twilight because, again, it was one of those, it was a very unhealthy relationship, which, of course, there's a lot of unhealthiness in this, but it's less unhealthy in this than it is in Twilight, I'll say that much. And then there's the sex, which, of course, is why we're talking about it. But to give you an example of a couple of things that go in the book that makes you think that maybe it's not that kinky. You know, there's Benoit balls. Okay. Spanking with Benoit balls. Okay. There's a suede flogger with silver balls at the end. You know, but everything in it tends to be about pleasure. And then the dominant character in it would enjoy inflicting only punishment pain, but only if there had been some sort of a violation of some agreed upon rule. So to me, it was also not necessarily the way an actual DS relationship works because, you know, he was really service topping her, even though she didn't know that, because he was doing shit for her to, you know, get her off, which, you know, because, you know, with the love of a good woman, he was able to change. And so that's why he did that. But they never once discuss what he did in his past relationships and how, what kind of a dominant that he was, which of course I'd be very interested to hear. Because I think that he, you know, kind of backslid to a mamby-pamby dominant. And nobody wants to backslide to be a mamby-pamby dominant. You want to, you know, kind of keep moving forward and keep growing and becoming better. Which, you know, how many of us do? Yeah, well, I guess all of us in the kinky world, we really do, especially when we chit-chat with our friends on the FetLife and the Twitter and stuff. But yeah, so reading this book made me want to write. Let's start with that. It's like a better book, like my own 50 Shades, but better, but never to be published because, let's be honest, I don't write like soft and pretty flowery things like they do. I wish I had something in front of me so I could read it to you because you would understand the sex and the this and the that. And it's also very romantic. But, you know, for those of us that are kind of in the lifestyle, that are far into the kinky world, this kind of a book, it seems very offensive because of the way that it's approached and the way that it's discussed and the kind of things that it says that, you know, not the acts that we do, but the why. I think for me, you know, the fact that the overall, one of the huge points of the whole story was that, you know, he was so traumatized as a child, so physically abused, that he wanted to take all of that out on his mom. And so his subs all look like what his mom looked like, which, you know, I think that that's a very common misconception. That's one of the reasons that we do these things is that, you know, mommy didn't love us enough, daddy didn't love us enough. And so we end up trying to seek out somebody upon which we can take out our anger. And I don't think I know for myself that I don't do this because I'm angry. In fact, I never, ever play with anybody when I'm angry because, I mean, that's my number one hard limit because that's not why I do it. I don't do it for that purpose. I do it for a very different purpose. And I try to do it from a very positive standpoint, where I'm trying to, you know, enjoy myself and get my own kind of pleasure as well as they can get their own kind of pleasure in you know, whatever way that they do it. Subspace, you know, whatever marks, usually subspace, which, you know, I gotta be honest, I'm jealous. I wish I knew what that felt like because I just don't. And don't worry, I'm never going to. It's just not gonna happen. It's all about letting go because apparently I'm a control freak, as I learned in this book, because I'm one of those. Okay, maybe I'm a little bit of a control freak, but not a lot. I'm not a control freak over you. But I really enjoyed that there was a little bit of discussing the struggle. But she doesn't struggle for long. You know, it's like it's the sex that makes her, you know, willy nilly to do anything, to just jump into this insane contract with Hard Limits and this fantastic playroom, which I would really like the playroom, to be honest. I want a playroom, but, you know, that's not happening today. But, you know, that's what I thought about that. So, you know, this week was supposed to be our Kinkapalooza. And because for obvious reasons, Nancy's not here, so we don't. So instead of having like 10 people here, we have just me. I'm all alone. But we are going to reschedule Kinkapalooza, which, for those of you who are unaware, that's going to be a special 2-hour play party in studio. And it's to celebrate our 1-year anniversary for the Love Bite, which, you know, is around now. We don't really know the actual date. I'm sure Nancy does, but I don't, because I don't know shit. And at it, you know, we might have, we're hoping there's going to be some sex. There's definitely be some fisting, and then some actual, you know, play. We'll have different implements. You'll be able to hear what the implements sound like, what people sound like. Maybe they can be coherent enough to speak after, so you can kind of hear a little bit of subspace. It should be really fun. I'm really looking forward to that, to having my toy bag out and just whatever. And then I want to run around like Phil Donahue with a microphone and start putting my microphone in people's faces when they're being played with and be like, how does that feel? And then I can really hear the smack on someone's ass. Because really, that sounds like a great soundbite, doesn't it? You know, like a big smack on someone's ass. So that's what I have to say about that. I honestly don't know when Nancy's going to be back. I really hope she's back next week, but next week is Father's Day, so, you know, I can totally understand why she isn't. She should spend time with her father. I am fatherless, so yeah, I'll totally be here, because I'm callous like that. Apparently, my daddy didn't love me enough, so there you go. It all comes full circle, doesn't it? Next week, I know I'm wrapping up way too early. Next week, I'm thinking it's going to be our masturbation episode. I'm thinking we're going to discuss... you know, because I know masturbation is kind of very generic, but that masturbation in the kinky world, how it's different from like regular everyday masturbation. And then, you know, hopefully that means we can have some, you know, pictures of toys that we will tweet and things so you guys can understand. If you don't already, most people know what a Hitachi is and what a rabbit is and things like that. But, you know, because everybody has different things. Some people like to put a butt plug in while they masturbate, which is awesome. Some people like to use a special kind of lube. And so, you know, this is kind of the information that we want to share with everybody. And, you know, during the masturbation episode, we fully encourage you to masturbate along. You know, we're totally okay with that. That's just kind of show that we are. Although, hopefully, with more people in the studio, it'll be humorous and funny. And so you'll laugh more, and so you won't be able to do it. But, you know, right now, because it's just me, it's just not as funny. It's just not. I'm sorry. I play off of people. I don't do stand-up comedy by myself. But, you know, that should be fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. Also, I'm going to teach a sissification and dollification class. And I think we had a sissification and dollification episode, but for those of you who are unfamiliar... you know, it's the dressing up of the boys and girls. But the way that I like to do it is very much like it could be a very playful or humiliating objectification, depends. I didn't get to play with Barbies a lot when I was a kid. My mom was a super feminist. So now I play with human Barbies. So that's what I like, especially the makeup and the hair. It's probably my favorite part. I mean, you know, the dressing is fine, but then, you know, and then posing them. I like posing them. That sounds like fun. So I'm going to do that when we have a class out here. So that'll be in a couple weeks. Not that you care, because most of you are not in LA. So that's going to be, we got a lot going on. And I know that Nancy has things going on too, but I don't remember because I don't write this shit down. And so I fail. This is why I have a sub to tell me shit, because I was lucky I had an outline for today, because otherwise I'd been like, I have no idea what I'm going to say. But if you guys have any questions or requests for topics, I actually got a request for a topic on the mindfuck. And that sounds like a fantastic topic. I have no idea how I would be able to do it, but I think that really kind of discussing and analyzing the mindfuck in some ways that they work and give examples of mindfucks that have happened in the past. I think that that could be really, really effective. And it can help highlight for maybe those that are having some difficulty in grasping that and how to do it themselves. Because, you know, for somebody like me who just, you know, naturally fucks with people, it's hard for me to break it down and explain it. But I would really enjoy trying to, figuring it out. So if you have any requests for how to do that and how to, you know, participate, next week we should be live. So you don't have to worry about it, because then I can have a call-in number and you can call in, because right now I can't. Doesn't matter. And my 50 Shades in Stick Figures will be up soon. That's going to happen probably this week. And that'll be on my website, which is at insidiousmuse.com. Which, I don't know. It should be funny, I hope. I don't know. If you haven't read it, though, maybe it won't be so funny. Maybe it's only funny for people who've actually read it. And then you'll, like, watch it and be like, I don't want to see this shit because I haven't read this stupid book. But there's stick figures having sex. So, you know, that doesn't get much, you know, it's pretty good, if you ask me. Because I like doing stick figures that have sex. But, So I got nothing else to say. I pretty much think that 58 minutes of talking is pretty phenomenal for me by myself. But please feel free to contact us on Twitter. There is @the_love_bite. I am @insidiousmuse. Nancy, we said this last week, but we'll say it again. She changed her name. She is now @service_slut. Which, of course, is perfect, because that's completely and totally her. I had made the suggestion that novice Nancy no longer fit, because she's really not a novice any longer. And so, luckily enough, can you believe it? Service Slut was available, which shocks me, knowing many of my Twitter friends. Like us on Facebook, which I assume is The Love Bite. I have liked it on Facebook, even on my own personal Facebook, which, you know, my mom's on my Facebook, so that's kind of weird. And then I had a whole other thing I was going to say, but I completely forgot it. Be sure to download us on the iTunes. And Nancy always says, review us. I assume that means you're supposed to write nice things about us, preferably. I mean, you know, if you want to be honest and say, you know, bitchy things, that's fine. But I have a preference that you be nice. That's the way that I go. If you have any, again, further requests, if you would like to send any condolences to Nancy, send it to her at her Twitter, which is @ServiceSlut. She, I'm certain, would be very appreciative of that. I know she's having a difficult time, but don't make them platitudes. Just make them really genuine. If you have any requests for topics or any just specific information, feel free to contact me directly at Twitter's probably easier, at Insidious Muse. I'm not giving out my email address, never mind. That would have been stupid. But that's about all we have. I hope that you guys have a fantastic whatever day this rebroadcasts. And next week for Father's Day, I think that masturbation is probably one of the perfect topics. So that's what we're going to do. So y'all have a good one. Thanks.